With the NBA playoffs coming back, something we're going to be seeing a lot is every player's fresh new cut. But you know what else needs a fresh new cut? Your lawn. That's why you should hit up Tavon's Lawn Care. Tavon's Lawn Care LLC is a black family-owned business located in York, Pennsylvania. Tavon's Lawn Care, or TLC for short, since they provide each job with tender love and care, has been in business for over 10 years. Founded by owner Tavon Parker, TLC aims to provide employment for underprivileged youth while providing great service at a reasonable rate. Visit Tavon's Lawn Care LLC or Tavon's Lawn Care on Facebook and Instagram to view their portfolio and request your cost-free quote today.
What's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the All In Podcast. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. If you're listening in on the replay version on the audio, I am not joined by my co-host Mike Badzik today. However, Couch Coach has joined us today from Couch Coach Live. How's it going, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. We appreciate you coming on the show, returning the favor of having us on yours, man. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be here, man. Definitely appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So we're going to get into a little bit of NBA, NFL, talk about week three, talk about the Heat taking a 3-1 lead over the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. And then right before the Lakers Nuggets get kicked off, we're going to do a little bit of a preview for you guys there. Before we get started, make sure you hit that subscribe button if you're tuning in on YouTube. If you're on Facebook, make sure you share the link. Let your followers or your friends know that you're watching our podcast live. Same on Twitter. Make sure you retweet. Make sure you guys leave likes, comments, things like that. If you have any topics, discussions, things like that, that you want us to put up on the screen and talk about it throughout the show, we will get those posted for you here, like my man Sean, who was repping Heat Nation so far in the playoffs. So a little bit of a bandwagon there, but okay. So let's get down to it, man. Let's talk about before we get into the sports. Actually, we have a very important topic that we want to get into. Obviously, the verdict out. Well, shouldn't even really call it a verdict because it never went to trial. But the Kentucky Attorney General decided not to press charges against two of the three officers involved in the Breonna Taylor shooting. One officer was charged, but essentially charged for the bullets, the stray bullets left in the wall of the neighbor's apartment. No charges for shooting or leaving any bullets in Breonna Taylor. So I think it's important we get into this tonight before we, you know, discuss any sports. So Couch Coach, what's your thoughts on the situation and really what this means in terms of just justice in general?
It's another tragedy. It's another one. It's almost like a double tragedy. First, you know, obviously the loss of Breonna Taylor, but then the outcome of this is even more tragic, where it's, you know, one of those things where this was a case where essentially everything that people have said in the past of other shootings of unarmed people and cops, she did everything that what people will quote unquote, what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to comply. She will sleep.
Yeah.
Like she didn't do anything. She was asleep and she was killed. And it's just one of the things where it's just so unfortunate of this situation where it's just, you just look at these things. It's like, we really have to look at it from a microscope and from a scope where it's like, these rules have to change. Like Kentucky, it's ridiculous. The thing, you have a law where someone can come into your home and they're open carry state. That's like if I was to come to your house and just shoot everything. I literally have the right to go to your home with a no-knock rule and to shoot you and your family. What sense does that make? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that, you know, the whole situation with the boyfriend situation where he had the right to shoot because there was an open carry. And so it was open carry state, and yeah, you're in this man's home. So to me, and then the way, from what I've been hearing, these officers came in plain clothes and they didn't announce themselves. And you're gonna come in somebody's house at midnight in plain clothes? like to me, it's and I think just going forward, where I think we just have to find, like, we have to do, we have to be very active in our communities. I think this is another thing where I touched on a little bit early in the podcast a few months ago, but that the George Floyd thing, where we really have to step up as far as when it comes to that. And I'm not talking about like voting for the presidential, but talking about our local elections. When we, you know, we have situations in hand where we have the power to vote for our supervisors of our district or what have you. This and third, and we have these conversations with these guys, and almost kind of in essence, be let those elected officials be like essentially like our advocates for those type of situations. So I think I understand where the where people are talking, and a lot of people, of course, talk about something that's emotional. Of course, it's an emotional situation when a 26-year-old woman is killed in her own home while she's asleep. It's going to be emotional. But in the same token, I don't fault people who look at it from that standpoint. It's emotional as hell. I mean, because we all know a 26-year-old woman in our life, all that could be a family member, a woman, it could be anybody. And we look at a situation where that could be anybody that we know. That could be a family member, a cousin, somebody. And that, right. And I think what it ultimately really boils down to is we really have to be active in our communities. And I'm not saying, to like what's going on now with the presidential situation. But no, I think people need to vote in their communities and be more active in our communities, where that's when the change really starts. Because you got to think about, that's ridiculous. When you sit down, you think about, there's a room where I can go in somebody's home in the state of Kentucky. I don't even have a knock on your door. I can come in, charge in, and kill anybody in there. And it's an open state, open carry state. So to me, we got to get these rules eradicated. I mean, at this point, I think, honestly, that's going to be probably the best thing that we could do at this point.
Yeah. And, it's certainly unfortunate, man. And it's just like, a day before, they're calling for a statewide emergency. They're calling in the National Guard. Preparing for the obvious outrage that there was going to be with the decision that was made. Well, here's my thing, and I get like, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, right? So I don't know the law in and out, and I'm not going to claim and pretend to be, but at some point there has to be common sense, right? Let's just look at the events leading up to this decision. The cops were fired. They were fired. So I don't think you do that, unless they did something wrong, right? So you fired the cops. There was a civil suit settled for $12 million paid to the family. And then as you're making this decision, which obviously you made prior to when you announced it, quite a bit in advance because you prepared for the outrage. So that was the third thing that you did leading up to making this announcement, was you prepared for outrage. Well, why would you need to prepare for outrage if justice was served? You know what I mean? Do you have to spend money on bringing in the National Guard if you just serve justice? One, wouldn't that be cheaper? And two, wouldn't that make more sense? Like, oh, well, people aren't going to be mad if we charge these officers because they did something wrong. We fired them. We paid the family $12 million. Those are two admissions of guilt. Essentially, that something was done. And even if it's not murder per se, it's got to be manslaughter, and she wasn't the one shooting. So you can't say that he was acting in self-defense, because the guy who was shooting lived. The lady who was sleeping died. You shot at the wrong person. So and then you punished him for shooting stray bullets into the wall of the neighbor's apartment. So that was worse than him putting bullets into the person who wasn't shooting at you. Where's the logic here? It doesn't make any sense. The math doesn't add up. And, like you said, Daniel Cameron is a publicly elected official in the state of Kentucky. And a lot of people don't know that, because when they go to these elections every 4 years and they vote on Trump and Biden or Trump and Hillary and things like that, they never look at the down ballot. You don't understand how many other people you are voting for on November 3rd in 2020. And a lot of people don't know that. And honestly, it's how these things happen, is these people infiltrate and sneak into office, because the people who do know that these things are important are the ones who are then pushing other people to go vote silently, right? They go, they call it the silent majority is the Trump group, right? So they're getting their people into office because they know, well, it doesn't really matter who's in the chair, right? If you, if these injustices will still happen, if we get the attorney generals in, the mayors in who appoint the police captains. So, okay, well, Obama can be in office and we can still get away with this dirt by putting in these people into these positions. You know what I mean? So, so, and Obama can't do nothing about that. Obama can't override this. You know what I mean? He has nothing, even if he was in office, even if Biden's in office in November, he can't change anything about what Daniel Cameron just did. Or the decision that he made not to charge these officers for manslaughter or murder. So that's where voting matters. Like there's a, there's pretty much an important election every year in your state, city, town, whatever. So whether it's school board, your mayor, you know, things like that. There's so many publicly elected officials that we don't even know about, man, because we're not paying attention. We just, we watching CNN and MSNBC and then people are, the other people are watching Fox News. We have the majority of the country who votes doesn't even know that Daniel Cameron was an elected official, you know? So, you know, it is what it is. And it's crazy, man, because I wasn't even shocked. I wasn't even shocked when he said it or when it was announced, when I saw it on my timelines, I wasn't shocked one bit. And I had this like dead inside reaction, you know what I mean? Cause it's just like, well, there's another one, another one bites the dust essentially. And it's just, it is, it sucks even feeling that way because a life was lost and there's not going to be any justice for it. $12 million isn't justice. That's why you paid it out. Cause it was obviously, it meant less than putting the officer in prison. So, you know, it's a tough situation, man. Something's got to give. We have to get more, we have to get smarter. We have to get more educated about these people who are being put into position of positions of power. To my fellow Black people who have lost faith in the voting system. I get it. I understand. I really do. And even if you vote this year, you know, if you do have a change of heart and you vote this year, that it's not going to change it right away. It changes slow. This is a 400-year system that we're fighting. And it's not going to be fixed overnight. It's not going to be fixed November 3rd. It's going to take years and years of us getting more educated on the process and getting educated about the people that we're putting into these positions of power where justice is determined or your fate essentially is determined. And really, it ain't even going to be about us. It's going to be about our kids, about the next generation after them and so on, whether or not they will continue to have to fight this fight. And really, it's on us to push this movement forward and continue to speak, not only speak out, but take real action steps, man, as far as doing things in your community, you know, getting people together and involved and just, you know, more educated about the issues at hand, because at the end of the day, that's what matters most. That's what's going to progress the movement and really affect real change. But it's going to take some time. We got to be patient. We got to be resilient. Got to be patient and got to be resilient.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on and get into the sports topics that we have for today. We're going to talk a little bit of NFL first and take a look into the week three coming up here. I know Jags and Dolphins are getting started here on Thursday night. I'm not sure anyone's watching that, but, you know, and, unless you're interested in Minshew Mania versus Fitzmagic, that might be something fun for you. I don't know. So we're going to talk about some of the games of the week, some of the upcoming games in the NFL. And we're going to start with Rams versus Bills. And this doesn't, you know, pop out on your screen as like two must-watch teams, but they are the two undefeated teams sitting atop of their divisions, or tied at least in the Rams' case, at 2-0. The Rams have beaten two NFC East teams, my beloved Eagles and the Cowboys, which was great. And the Bills so far have had a pretty easy schedule, Jets and Dolphins to start the year going 2-0. But Josh Allen has looked great so far. So what are your thoughts heading into this game? just about Josh Allen in general and his what seems to be an improvement so far.
Yes, I think Josh Allen is so funny because last year we were so harped up on he's only completing 58% of his passes.
Right.
Now he's at 60 plus, and with him having 727 yards and 6 touchdowns, he's what I call – he has a sneaky yet productive yet low-key MVP-like season so far at this point. Yeah. He's really showing his arm now where, you know, it's funny we used to just label him as like, – as a guy with the big arm from Wyoming. So
right.
I like now he's got to a point where he is there giving him the control. He's, you know, fitting to his role and then having a guy like a Stephon Diggs there having a main target there. So that definitely helps him tremendously. And I definitely like the Bills going forward, just, you know, overall.
Yeah. Yeah, he's looked good so far, man. Granted, not the greatest defenses on the planet. So I think this will be a little bit more of a test for him and give a little bit more insight into whether like Josh Allen is really about to take that step forward.
Yeah.
Because the Rams have a pretty solid defense, to say the least, with, you know, Aaron Donald leading that front seven, Jalen Ramsey, guys like that in their defensive backfield. So it's gonna be interesting to see how they match up. What I'm really interested to see is for the Rams offensively, if they start to get Cooper Kupp a little more involved. He's been a little bit quiet so far to start. And again, the Bills are another team with a good defense. So it won't be easy. It's also going to be, we'll see how that backfield plays out. It doesn't look like, or I wouldn't expect Cam Akers to play. And even if he does, he's probably going to be pretty limited. Malcolm Brown had his own, finger injury that kind of saw him leave late in that one. So it looks like it's Daryl Henderson's backfield for this game. Who knows about the future? But he looked good. He looked good against my Eagles, who actually have a pretty good run defense. It's the one thing that they are good at is usually defending the run. But he seemed to have his way with the defense. So what are you thinking about this Rams backfield and their role in this one?
You know, so interesting. I have an interesting fact about the Rams. So they've won 27 straight games when they've had at least 110 yards rushing. The last time they lost a game was like with that those amount of rushes. They dated back to 2018 or something like that. I forgot. It was like I think 2017 or 18, whatever year that was. But that's gonna be interesting, especially now when you look at the Bills defense. I think Bills defense are. They're getting there, and I look at that way. I think it's going to be interesting. And then, like you're saying, the rash of injuries on the Rams running backs situation. And you know, I definitely think they can take advantage of that matchup per se. Like you said, like what he did against Philly, which you guys did last week against Philly, which like you're saying, a great run, you know, great run defense. Obviously, they held us 2 weeks ago. My Washington football team, we didn't get much on the ground in that game. So yeah, I definitely that's gonna be definitely a test for the Bills defensively. And this is definitely gonna be a change of pace because now you know they're playing a team in the AFC in NFC West. Pardon me. So this is gonna be an interesting matchup.
Who you got for this one?
It's in Orchard Park, so give me the Bills. Give me Josh Allen and the Bills 3-0 in consecutive years.
Okay, going with the Bills here to knock off the undefeated Rams.
Yes.
I'm gonna go with the Rams. I think I need to see it to believe it from Josh Allen at this point, and I think this will be his first real test. So I'm gonna go with the Rams. I think they're a little more seasoned for these kind of games, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if the Bills pull this one off. That's gonna be a good one to watch.
Absolutely.
So let's get into the next one we have here, which is Cowboys and Seahawks. I think this one, is gonna draw a lot of eyes to it. I'm gonna be blunt and say that I'm rooting for the Seahawks here, and I hope they win by 30. But, I think this one's going to be a good one to watch. Russ, who is the MVP favorite so far after 2 weeks, according to Vegas. And no shock, he's been incredible through the first two games. Cowboys offense looked very good against the Falcons. It finally, you know, it took a little bit for them to get going. They had that crazy comeback against the Falcons. Not sure that they deserved to win that game after how the, you know, how it was going, but the Falcons certainly deserved to lose after that onside kick debacle. So let's talk a little bit about this one. What are your keys to the game for Cowboys Seahawks on both sides?
I think for the Seahawks, once again, of course, Russell Wilson, the pride of Richmond, Virginia. Let Russ cook. I mean, it has worked to you know, its advantage. I look at just from the simple point of just let Russ do his thing. The Cowboys situation is very interesting. Like, to me, I think their key is they have to have a good start. They got to start early because you can't have a bad start like what you did with Atlanta, because Atlanta defense is just trash. Like, me and you could play on that team, man, we probably could get about 20 points from the Falcons. Yeah. I mean, the second of weeks when they gave up 38 to Seattle, and then they gave up 40 last week. So I know we can at least by ourselves can get 20 off the Atlanta Falcons defense. Correct. So the key is, this ain't the Falcons. Like, you down by 20 with them, they're not going to social distance the onside kick. So you're not going to have these situations where you get lucky. So to me, the beauty of Dallas in this situation, they don't have to worry about the fans, the what we call the 12th man element. That's going to be the beauty of going to Seattle this year. If you do go to Seattle, where you don't have to worry about that atmosphere. I think the key is for the Cowboys, they have to go off to a good start.
Yeah.
I mean, and to me, they're going to have to just get to the end. And essentially, that's going to be the biggest key. They have to have a strong start, because at the end of the day, the way Seattle has been, and it's in a weird way where it's just like, you have to get them early, because if you don't, it's going to be a long night.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how the Cowboys passing game looks against the Seahawks secondary. Which hasn't looked good so far. They've pretty much gotten torched and have been one of the worst secondaries in the league, if not the worst, through the first two games, which is interesting, because that's normally, you know, what the Seahawks take pride in is being able to defend the pass well. They traded for Jamal Adams to strengthen their secondary in the offseason. And, you know, it hasn't quite panned out yet. Maybe they're still working out the kinks. But, you know, this is going to be the game where they have to step up, because – that Cowboys trio of receivers is nothing to be played with. They have three very talented guys. Dak can get all those guys the ball as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they match up with CeeDee Lamb, Gallup, and Amari Cooper. And then also, if the Cowboys can establish a run game, you know, against that Seahawks front seven, I think those would be some of the keys, you know, on whether or not the Cowboys will be able to win this, because I don't think they'll be able to stop the Seahawks offense. I think, you know, Russell Wilson and co will handle business there. It's going to really come down to if the Seahawks will get back to that gritty defensive team that they've always been, you know, will kind of determine the outcome of this game. So who you got out of this one, Cowboys or Seahawks?
I'm going to wave that 12-man flag at 425. Give me the Seahawks all day.
Yeah, I'm taking the Seahawks as well. I think they're the better team, better quarterback. I think we see a little bit better from the defense in this one. So, definitely going with the Seahawks here until the Cowboys prove otherwise. I don't think they're quite ready. For those of you tuning in on the live stream, whether you're on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, leave comments on who you think is going to win each of these matchups here. We'll post them up on the screen for the viewers to see. We're going to move on now to Packers and Saints. I think this one's going to be a good one. Now, hopefully, Davante Adams is healthy. His status is questionable. And possibly Michael Thomas on the other end. For the Saints is trying to work his way back. They said he would be out for several weeks, but they didn't put him on IR. And really, he was trying to flirt with coming back, you know, next week. So his status is up in the air and questionable as well. But I think if both of those guys play, we're looking at a shootout here in this one. So I think first thing we got to talk about in this matchup is Drew Brees. He has not looked great in these first two games, man. Is it time for him to hang it up? Is he washed finally?
And you know what's funny that you say that? This will be the perfect matchup to determine. This is the measure stick game for him. Because you look at, like, the Green Bay's defense, trash.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, to me, can this team recover? And you think about, and like, what they had six, like, how many? They had 129, they had penalties resulting in 129 yards. And penalties last week. So then you know, you go to Las Vegas. We understand, hey, the mystique of the new stadium. Okay, we give you a pass.
Right.
Now, Sunday Night Football, you're at home. You lose to the Green Bay Packers. And if Drew Brees struggles, people are going to be calling for Jameis on local radio in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Because at this point you had 1-2, especially and with like and the beauty thing with and thing with Green Bay is, it's like they just you don't have to if you're gonna win this game, you're gonna have to put up points. So that means Drew Brees gonna have to really like up the ante, because this will be the game where if Drew Brees looks like he's did last two games, some people are gonna be calling for Jameis Winston.
Yeah. So, I mean, my thing is, you certainly signed Jameis for a reason, and it wasn't to sit the bench forever. So, you know, I think that's going to be interesting, especially if Michael Thomas is back and he looks like – even if he looks like 90% of himself and Drew Brees is still horrible, then you really got to look at it like, dang, he can't – you know what I mean? Against this defense, he couldn't get it done, you know what I mean, with a mostly healthy or somewhat healthy Michael Thomas back, you certainly got to – I don't know that you bench him right away, but you certainly got to, you know, start getting – or Jameis at least has to start getting himself ready. Like, yo, I might be out here by week 5 or 6, depending on what our record is looking at. So in that case, let's say week 6 hits. What does the Saints' record need to be week 6 for them to turn to Jameis?
Probably 1-5.
1-5. So 2-4, you're still rocking with Drew Brees.
Yeah, 2-4, because at least 2-4, you're like, okay, that's two games. There's like two games kind of sandwiched in between.
Right.
But you 1-5, they're like, because New Orleans, the thing with New Orleans is, there's a standard there. So if they fall to 1-5 and Drew Brees is playing like this, first they're going to be pissed off that Teddy Bridgewater, they let Teddy Bridgewater walk. And then second, they're going to be calling. And the thing is, if they fall to 1-2 this week, you're going to hear echoes.
Yeah.
Like we talk about in 3 weeks from now and they haven't lost and won a game. It's going to be a revolt. Like, there's going to be people knocking at Sean Payton's door like, look, you need to get Drew Brees out of here. You need to get that 41-year-old quarterback out of here.
Yeah, especially when, like, you know, maybe you're – if you have any – you know, plans of Jameis eventually replacing Drew Brees in the future.
Right.
Sitting at 1-5, you're probably not making the playoffs. So you're probably like, all right, you know, Drew Brees is on his way out. Let's get Jameis in and you know, see what we got, you know, and Jameis, see if he's the future. Because even if it don't really get better from there, you know what I mean, you got to at least know whether or not Jameis is going to be your guy going forward or whether you should start preparing to try to get Trevor Lawrence in the draft or however – you know what I mean? Or address that in the draft, whatever you got to do. Because, you know, you only got Jameis for a year. He only signed a 1-year deal. So if you do want to find out whether he's the guy, you know, you got to do it this year if you're not in a position to make the playoffs. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. On the other hand, the other veteran QB, Aaron Rodgers, has looked great so far in his first two games. Granted, Lions defense isn't really anything at all after losing Darius Slay. But the Bears defense, you know, he pretty much lit up in week one. So what are your thoughts on the Packers offense? How's it look so far? Aaron Jones has been great as well.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the Packers offense so far?
Yeah. Aaron Jones, they have a running back. like this is, they have a legitimate bona fide running back at this point that what we're seeing. Aaron Rodgers is like, look, you did me dirty. You did me dirty by not drafting a wide receiver in this draft, in a wide receiver rich draft that I always say. So guess what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go off, and I know what y'all gonna do. I mean, LaFleur, I know you want to, you know, you want to bring in your little heir apparent. But guess what? I'm gonna show you. Hey, I'm 30. I'm what, 37? I'm gonna show you guys. I still got it. So
yeah.
Y'all want to get rid of me? Other teams got tape on me. So
yeah,
be ready to open up that Brinks truck when they release me in March.
Yeah, I love seeing Aaron Rodgers play well, man. You know, he finally has a running game, something that he typically throughout his career has not had.
Never.
It's great to see that because I think it makes him look so much better. The defense was good last year. It's not quite what it was. You know, it hasn't been too good this year. Hopefully they can pick it up. And I think they could be, with the way he's playing right now and with the way that Aaron Jones is playing right now, you know, with a healthy Davante Adams, I think they're a legitimate contender in the NFC to come out of the NFC and make it to the Super Bowl. But only if the defense, you know, can tighten it up and hold it down in that case. So let's give our predictions for this one. Who you got?
All right, well, give me – I'm going to go with the Saints. I think it's just – I can't imagine on Monday morning we're talking about a 1-2 Saints team. Some bizarre reason, I just have a strange feeling. Like, I think they're going to end up winning this game.
Yeah, so this one's a tough one for me too, because obviously the health of Davante Adams and Michael Thomas I think is going to play a part in this. But assuming that at least Davante Adams is healthy, I don't know what we're looking at for Michael Thomas, but if Davante Adams is healthy, I'm taking the Packers because I don't know. There's something off about the Saints right now, especially without Michael Thomas. So I'm going to take the Packers in this case. I'm going to assume Davante Adams makes it back this week and assume Michael Thomas doesn't, because I think that's kind of where things might be trending. And I like the Packers in that case. I think that'll play a big factor. So then let's get to our last matchup that we have for the NFL is Chiefs versus Saints. Or I'm sorry, we had Packers and Saints. Chiefs versus Ravens is what that should say, my bad. Chiefs play Ravens on Monday Night Football. That's going to be must-see TV. I think we got robbed of that last year in the, you know, NFC or AFC Championship with Tennessee, rightfully so, pulling off a great upset. But I think this is the matchup people wanted to see in the AFC Championship. And it could be what we see this year if the Ravens figure it out in the playoffs. How excited are you for this matchup?
I am uber excited. To me, I look at the storylines. I think the biggest storyline, one of the biggest hyperbole of the week is whoever wins this game is going to get that bad week. Because I think these guys, and I call me crazy, I think they're just on that type of collision course where they're at a point where whoever wins this game is going to get that number one seed and that only bye that we have now in the playoffs is the number one seed. So I love it. And like, you know, these are two of the best quarterbacks in our league. And to me, it's everything that you want in a football game. I mean, just in one sitting, and it's amazing to think you got like Patrick Mahomes on one side, then you got, you know, Lamar Jackson, who is fighting to be like a Patrick Mahomes, where they it's almost like they're both are like they're. I know this is early, and I know this will sound low key weird. This is almost like our Bird and Magic.
Yeah, yeah.
Where these guys are going to be competing. And it's funny, they're all on the same trajectory. Like, they both won MVPs in their second year. And who said, what's Lamar going to, you know, well, I don't know their second year, but as far as Lamar just won an MVP, Patrick Mahomes has won an MVP. He followed it up with a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
That's where Lamar wants to go.
Right.
So this is just a matchup where it's the quintessential Bird and Magic of our era in the NFL, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, man. You know, I'm a big fan of both of these quarterbacks, especially Mahomes. And you know, well, even Lamar Jackson, he's electrifying. He's changing the QB position. Both of them in their own ways are really. So anytime these two are in the field together, it's must watch TV. And we're going to get them in prime time Monday Night Football. But like you said, already in week three, we're talking about a game that could potentially decide, you know, the AFC champ or the first round bye in the AFC, you know, between these two teams. And I think really what it's going to come down to is will the Chiefs defense, you know, step up, and can the Ravens defense kind of figure out how to deal with all this speed and really find out how to kind of slow down Patrick Mahomes. These two teams did meet last year. Chiefs ended up pulling it out late, but it was close the entire time. So it's going to be interesting to see, man. I think it's going to be a shootout, even though the Ravens defense is very good. The Chiefs offense is that good. So I think it's going to be a shootout. But like, can Ravens control the tempo and try to keep Mahomes and those guys off the field as long as they possibly can. I think if they can do things like that, I think the Ravens can pull off the win here. Who are you going with? Who are you taking in the Monday night matchup?
And the irony of it is, it's funny. Well, the Baltimore defense, and it's funny because Baltimore defense has always been their calling card.
Yeah.
And now you look at now with this offensive component, and you look at now where the defense has been very, very good. Like as far as holding Deshaun Watson and the Texans to 16 points, and then destroying Cleveland. So in this matchup, and to the Chiefs, It's weird to say it because I think when we're comparing them with the Ravens, they have struggled mightily. I mean, you look at, you know, the opening game, which feels like a month ago, which has only been 2 weeks with the Texans. And then they, you know, they kind of struggled with the Chargers, which I understood because of the Justin Herbert thing. They really didn't have much tape on them per se or prepare for him.
Right.
But give me the Ravens. I think the Ravens are going to take care of business, and I hope they enjoy that win on Monday, and then they get ready to cross that beltway and beat and pack their lunch for that Washington football team next week.
Yeah. So this one's a tough one for me, man. You know, I'm gonna go opposite though. I'm gonna go Chiefs. I'm gonna go opposite. I'm gonna make it interesting. I'm gonna go with Chiefs. I just think as good as that Ravens defense is, I think the Chiefs figure it out, man. Andy Reid is incredibly creative as a play caller. So I'm gonna go with the Chiefs in this case. I'll go Chiefs by three. Late field goal decides it. Sean's going with the Ravens by three. He's a Ravens fan. What else did we expect there?
Yeah, I got the Ravens too.
So that's all we have for NFL topics. Remember, if you follow us on Twitter @all_in_pod, you can follow our Sunday vote or pick 'em thread. We do a pick 'em thread for all the games Sunday through Monday, which you can vote on. So be ready for that. Make sure you follow us on Twitter so you can catch up with that. You can find our @name and socials at the bottom of your screen there. And now let's transition into some basketball. We got about 20 minutes till kickoff of Lakers and Nuggets. But first, before we get to them, let's talk a little bit about Heat Celtics. Crazy, crazy game last night. The Celtics go down 3-1 in a 3-point loss to the Heat last night. And it's not looking good, man. It's you know, we've seen 2-3-1 comebacks this playoffs alone. Now they both came from the Nuggets. But you know, maybe it's a little bit easier in the bubble to do so, but it's, you know, you never like your odds there. Couch coach, is this series over?
Yeah. Boston. I hate to say this, but stop packing your bags. You get ready to come.
Yeah.
Like, what Miami has done, and it's funny that in the beginning, you know, well, when the playoffs started, I was like, well, Miami could be like a dark horse. But to me, I didn't think it was going to get this far, like to a point where they were going to actually represent the East.
Yeah.
And I figured they were going to scare people. I figured they were going to, like, they were going to play Milwaukee well. I didn't think they were going to beat them in five. Yeah. I didn't think, especially even in this series, which is the most weirdest thing, where this was an interesting stat I found today, where head-to-head, they're tied points-wise. But Miami has a 3-1 lead.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and the thing with Miami is Miami is they're built so perfectly. They got a guy in a Jimmy Butler who's a closer. He got guys that aren't prima donnas. Like this ain't like his Philly situation, his Minnesota situation. Yeah. He got guys who are hungry. I call them from the dirt. Tyler Hero was a guy, because you gotta really think about it. He's in that Zion Williamson class, John Moran, in that cluster of the class 2018. And people looked at him like, okay, well, he's Tyler Hero. He goes to Kentucky. Like he was in a class of Zion. So everybody looked at Zion and they kind of blew past him. Oh yeah, Tyler, he's great. This and third. So he's, you know, from the mud. Bam, another Kentucky guy. Straight out the mud. Where these guys are this grit, they tough, and then you know Duncan Robinson who get hit shots, and then Tragic, he's another one where he's literally an NBA journeyman, and he is performing lights out in the series, and it's the perfect storm. You got these type of guys on his team, and you got a finisher like a Jimmy Butler. Whereas, like, you know, I've heard people say, well, he needs to step up more. The thing about it is, I agree in a sense, but at the end of the day, when you got Tyler Hero scoring 37 points, you got, you know, guys like Dragic's 22, Bam's giving you a double-double, he's still getting his at 28 and still at 24 points, and he was still good last night. So,
yeah,
and he can close it, and that's the beautiful thing about it. And they got like a marksman, as I talked about Duncan Robinson, where it's just like they're the perfect storm, and they are going to be a problem in the NBA Finals. This isn't going to be a cakewalk for whoever makes it, which we'll allude later. But
right,
this team is just it's phenomenal. Like, I mean, they've extremely exceeded my expectations at this point.
Yeah, I can't believe that we're having this discussion right now about the Heat going to the NBA Finals.
Me too.
You know, if you really sit back and look back to before the season, or you know, even throughout the playoffs, like you said, like I was hesitant to pick them against Milwaukee, even though like deep down I was like, yo, the Heat are one of the teams in the East that are well constructed to beat Milwaukee. Something about it was just like, you know, maybe I don't know. You know what I mean? They got Giannis, they got Jimmy Butler. I'm looking best player versus best player. And it was way deeper than that. It turned out to be. So, you know, and they not only beat Milwaukee, they handled them in five. And now, we're possibly looking at the same thing with a good Celtics team. I think this is a very good and deep Celtics team. Maybe if Gordon Hayward was healthy for the first two games, maybe we're having a different discussion. I don't necessarily know. But like you said, this team is built beautifully around Jimmy Butler, man. It really is. And it's rare that a guy like him really finds an entire team where the personality like perfectly fits that kind of style. You know what I mean? It's like normally, even like when Kobe, you know, during his time at the Lakers had that harsh type of leadership, there's guys who can't take that. You know what I mean? There's always been guys like that. And, you know, not everybody can be led that way where it's kind of just like, I'm calling you on your BS. You know what I mean? Or we're going to be blunt about everything. We're going to be honest about everything. We're not sugarcoating anything for anybody. A lot of people can't be led that way, but everybody in that Miami locker room seems to be okay with that kind of an environment where like, yo, if I don't do something or if I miss an assignment, hold me accountable. And Jimmy Butler is that kind of guy. He's the kind of guy who wants to hold everybody around him accountable. And it's beautiful to see, honestly, that he found the situation that was best for him. I think, you know, Embiid wanted to be in that type of environment in Philly, but Ben Simmons and clearly Brett Brown did not. And Jimmy Butler didn't feel that. And obviously the two, you know, the organization and Jimmy Butler decided to go their separate ways. They didn't feel it was a fit. And look what happened. You know, if we look at the franchises that he left, the Bulls are picking in the lottery. Now, granted, they didn't trade him because they didn't like his style or whatever. He was mostly moved because they were already trending in that direction of rebuild. They were trying to move him to a contender. But the T-Wolves, where he first butted heads with Kat and Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is now gone and in Golden State, which might be a better environment for him anyway. But, you know, the Timberwolves have the number one pick now with Jimmy Butler gone. You look at the Sixers. Sixers couldn't get a win in the first round of the playoffs. They were a shot away from being in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Meanwhile, Jimmy Butler is a game away from the NBA Finals. And it's just like kind of an I told you so kind of thing. You know what I mean? I tried to elevate. And not to mention, in both Philly and Minnesota, he was with more talented players, I think you can say, right? Because he had Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who was a number one pick, Towns, who was a number one pick. Okay, you know what I mean? Like, those teams were more talented on paper. They didn't have the grit, though, to go with it, you know, to match Jimmy Butler's level of intensity. And he's, you know, he's found his place, though. He's found his home. And happy for him and happy that the Heat are possibly going to the finals here. I do think it's over. Maybe the Celtics steal a game, but I don't see this going past six games. And really what it came down to, it's interesting that you brought up that stat that, you know, the series is actually tied as far as score.
Yeah.
Coming into game three, the Celtics had led for 75% of the minutes in this series coming into last night's game. And the Heat were up 2-1. So it's just like essentially what it came down to was the Heat made more plays down the stretch when it mattered most throughout this series. And we saw it again last night. Yeah. Now, the Heat controlled most of this game throughout the first half in game four. And Jason Tatum was abysmal in that first half. He was pretty bad. But then in that third quarter, he really picked it up. And that's where we saw the Celtics start to climb back into the game was when Jason Tatum got hot. But then in that fourth quarter, both teams were going at it. And then the Heat, again, in crunch time, they stepped up. They made the plays. Tyler Harrell was incredible last night. Incredible. 37. I love this kid. Again, he's another, like you said, he's from – He gets it from the mud, even though, like, he doesn't look like it at all, right? He looks exactly like a spoiled rich kid, but he doesn't play like it at all. He doesn't have that mentality at all. He's a killer. He absolutely has that killer mentality. And this is off the bench, you get 37 from your rookie. And it kind of goes back to what Jimmy Butler highlighted during the Bucks series. After Jimmy Butler had that huge game one, and had all those buckets down the stretch. Someone asked him, should Giannis, guard him at least in the fourth quarter or, you know, start to guard him individually more, right? And he was like, well, you know, I don't think that's really a good idea. He's one of the best help defenders in the league. He said, and the other thing is, like, I'm not the only one who can do this. You know, he said, I'm not the only one who can take over games late. He said, there's other guys here who can do exactly what I did in this game. And he's right. I mean, we saw Dragic take over most of the first two games that they won. He was their best player down the stretch. Jimmy Butler made some key plays, in game two that helped them down the stretch. But offensively, it was a lot of Dragic. Game three, the Celtics made the better plays down the stretch. But here in game four, it was Tyler Harrow. So it hasn't really been Jimmy Butler in this series. That's other than game one. He did hit a big shot in game one. But other than that, it has not been Jimmy Butler who has carried them down the stretch of these games for the majority of this series. It's been like either a total team effort or it's been, you know, another guy stepping up. And that's what makes this team so lethal and so scary is that anybody on any given night can give you 40. Or 35 plus. You know what I mean? There's multiple guys that they have that can dominate games. That's a team that you don't want to see at any time in the postseason when, you talk about unaccounted for points. Like, you're never expecting 37 from Tyler Harrow as a coaching staff. You never go into the locker room like, yo, we have to stop Tyler Harrow or we have to slow Tyler. If we can keep Tyler Harrow under 15, we did a good job on it. But 37, you're never prepared for that.
Never.
So, you know, I do think the Heat closed this one out eventually, and probably next game. It's tough to get up for, a series when you're down that fifth game when you're down 3-1. But if the Celtics can steal it, that's where, you know, the doubt starts to creep in if you're the leading team, and that's where like those 3-1 collapses happen. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're the Heat, you got to come out and say, yo, let's finish this right now. We don't want to be the Clippers. We don't want to be Golden State a few years ago or OKC a few years ago. Let's go finish this out in 5 and get rested for the finals.
Right.
So last thing we want to get into here before the game gets started is Lakers versus Nuggets. Lakers pulled one back. Nuggets pulled one back, brought it to 2-1 by winning game 3. Jamal Murray hit some big shots down the stretch for the Nuggets. And that game 4 is about to kick off here. We talked a little bit about this pre-show, but going into this one, what are your keys to tonight's game for Lakers-Nuggets?
The Lakers, those turnovers, man, you got to stop committing those turnovers. Like, I think they had 24 turnovers that led to like 29 points. And I'm just like, man, y'all, you can't, especially for a team like Denver. Denver is just, you can't have those many turnovers. And to me, that's going to be the biggest key. And I think even LeBron James even said that as well, where it's just like, you know, we can't give up those many turnovers and give those guys opportunities like that.
Yep.
And like, to me, it's just like, and Denver key is, hey man, just keep playing and play loose. Like,
yeah.
Like, and that's what's so scary about Denver. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because they're another team where I figured they could overcome like with last year, because last year essentially they were, you know, game 7 of the semifinals, and they pretty much, if they didn't blow in the fourth quarter, they would have been in the West Conference Finals last year. So now we were like, well, okay, now they should be where they are. So they are where we expect them to be. But to me, I just look at it from that standpoint where it's like, hey, continue to play loose. It's guy, and if you can get another good game out of Jerami Grant again,
yeah,
like that's gonna be huge. And that's another thing to kind of neutralize, because if you look at it from a matchup between the dynamic duos, I mean, obviously AD is playing out of his mind.
Yeah,
LeBron is doing his thing. You know, Jamal Murray and Jokic, they're doing their thing. But if you get especially like him, because I think Caldwell Pope had like 18 for them for the Lakers last game. But if you can get, because I think what Jerami Grant had 26 points last night, the night before. So to me, it's going to be whoever's that third guy that's going to step up for both of these teams. It's got to be a third guy to step up. I mean, and the beauty thing about it is, who's to say, like the Lakers, you can get, you know, certain flashes, like you can see it. But now, I mean, you don't know. Michael Porter Jr. might go off tonight.
Yeah.
Like, PJ Dozier might go off tonight. In the most ironic of nights, and it would be funny if that does happen. Like, if PJ Dozier has 20-some points, you know what? That would be crazy if he gets, like, 20 points. But that's a scary thing about Denver, and it's just really – who's that third guy on both of these teams? Who's going to be the one that's really going to step up? And that's going to be the biggest key.
Yeah, and I think that really matters most for Denver is who that third guy ends up being. Because like LeBron and AD, as far as when you're looking at star power, those two, they don't necessarily need a third guy to step up if they're both playing well. But like for the Nuggets, even if Jokic and Murray are playing well, they're probably going to need a third guy to step up for them to win games, which is what they got out of Jerami Grant in game 3. Game 3. In game 2, they got it from PJ Dozier. And really, they were on the verge of winning that game until obviously AD knocks down that huge 3. We could be talking about a different series here. We could talk about the Nuggets being up 2-1 if AD doesn't knock down that shot. But the last couple of games, the Nuggets have gotten that third person to step up. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who it is tonight. Maybe it is Michael Porter Jr., who really gets it going and has a big game for the Nuggets here in game 4. And I think as the Lakers perspective, I think you have to treat tonight as a must win, because this Denver team isn't one that you want to let hang around, which the Clippers and the Jazz both figured out the hard way, and they were up 3-1 in their series when they took their foot off the gas. If I'm the Lakers, I'm treating this game and next game as must wins. I want to get these guys out of here as soon as possible, because the longer that this series drags on, I think the more it favors Denver, because they have that experience of the last two series and that momentum of the last two series of coming back from deficits. I don't think you want to give them that kind of confidence, you know what I mean, with a win tonight or, you know, with a win in game five, you know, either. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, man. In that case.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting about it? We are Jamal Murray. If he would have caught the rebound, essentially,
yeah,
we'd be a 2-1 series. And it was very important for them to win in game three, because I looked at that game that Anthony Davis shot to me, and then the Kobe, him doing the Kobe, where it's like that's what we all did in the backyard. Yeah. To me, I looked at that was something of fate.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
for Denver to kind of come back and kind of and win that game, this lets me know, like, hey, we write this Laker team as a team of destiny, but Denver's knocking on the door, so I'm like, hey, this is not gonna be not on our watch. So yeah. I was definitely impressed for them winning game two. Like you said, the Lakers, they should, like you said, these next two games should be like, you know, let's just get out of here and focus. Because to me, yeah, because at this point, if they win tonight, they 3-1. Saturday, your mentality is like, look, whatever we got to do, we have to. We must. We have to. Without a shadow of a doubt, we got to win this game. Yeah. Because you cannot let this team go to a game six. We've seen that. You've seen that with your fellow your tenant at your stable center.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, don't play around.
Yeah, don't play.
So who you got tonight, real quick, before they end up getting started? Who you taking, Lakers or Nuggets?
Give me the Nuggets. We got tie series.
Yeah, I think one of these series, I'd like to see one of these series, you know, go a little bit longer. Yeah. However, I think the Lakers come out with a sense of urgency tonight. I think AD has more than two rebounds like he did last game, and also Dwight and JaVale play better. I do have the Lakers going up 3-1 tonight. I think the talent will prevail in this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, that's all that we had for you guys here today. Episode 41 of the All In Podcast is in the books. Couch Coach, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. Tell the listeners where they can find your podcast for audio, video, stuff like that.
All right. Couch Coach Live, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. The visual, pretty much YouTube. Also, check out the website, couchcoachlive.com. And also social media. Check us out on social media. Anywhere you get your social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Couch Coach Live.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, guys, make sure if you're a fan of our podcast, you'll certainly be a fan of theirs. Make sure you follow them on all those social medias, and make sure you also tune in YouTube, Facebook. They go live on Twitter as well, and all audio feeds. Same with us. If you're watching here today, make sure you hit that subscribe button on YouTube. If you're on Facebook, you can find the YouTube link on our page. Same with Twitter. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications so you get notifications for when we go live, when new videos drop, things like that. If you're listening in on the audio platforms, make sure if you leave a like or a rating, subscribe, and leave a review. You know, let us know what you think about the podcast. And then follow us on all of our social media platforms. On Twitter, we're at @all_in_pod. The other ones you could find on the ticker below here on the screen if you're watching on the live or on Facebook. But we appreciate you guys tuning in to another episode. We're going to let you go. Enjoy Lakers versus Nuggets. Thank you guys for tuning in, and have a great night.